Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 13th of April, recording at 8:12 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, since tomorrow, Friday, is a holiday in the UK, so is Monday, incidentally, this office will be closed on both Friday and Easter Monday. And therefore, this is the big picture long-term audio. Now on Tuesday, Owen will be in the hot seat because, well, Mrs. Fuller gets back from a week in Moscow where she's been training psychoanalysts, and she deserves a longer break, and so I will be away until Thursday, but you of course will be in Owen's capable hands on Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, first the highlights here. And this is a very interesting day. Stock market's mostly mixed. Wall Street hasn't closed, but it's down a little bit on the Dow and S&P, but up on the NASDAQ here. But a little bit of just holding action in here. The big news, though, in terms of highlights, is that the bond markets were really hit in here today. Those US 10-year yields have broken above the 5% level, and the chart action's rivetingly consistent. I, having increased my positions almost on a daily basis, I just move my stops up, particularly as I'm going to be away for a while. Dollar, nothing going on there, although the New Zealand dollar tried to break out of its range and move higher, but got knocked back. I've been tempted by that because it looks oversold, but then again, I know that the New Zealand government and central bank don't want their currency to appreciate, and so I don't like being on the wrong side of a central bank's interests. May let that one go. And in precious metals, this was extremely interesting. I hear gold absorbed a lot of profit taking earlier in the day, and we actually saw, I think bullion got down to 590 at one stage, 590.70, currently 596.47. That's still down a little bit on the day, but pretty steady generally. And that was sort of action we saw in most of the precious metals, profit taking, and then with the gains, I beg your pardon, the losses cut right back towards the closes, particularly for silver, which has been in such stunning form here recently. And in energy, this is really quite interesting because crude oil, NYMEX, had dipped under $68 earlier today, but as I speak, right now we're near the high of the day, it's at $69.60. And so, really looking at that Katrina level. Now, gasoline dipped today, got rather perilously close to my in-the-money stop, and which is just a safety stop more than a technical stop. I don't want to take too many risks at this time, as you know, and again, particularly going away for a few days. But that closed on the high. I think it's the May contract closing at 211. Up 189, to say, after a significant dip during the day. So that chart action really looks very, very positive. And natural gas has seen a big upward dynamic off the low in here today. Currently up, looks like this is a closing price up 327 points. Here we haven't seen many of those in quite some time, and actually that's the best action in natural gas since it had a fake out around the $10 level in January. Now, by fake out I mean it had a one strong upward dynamic of having broken down out of a top area, and it rebounded quite strongly, but then keyed dramatically a couple of days later on the downside. Okay, so where are we now in terms of the big theme issues overall? Well, I'm going to return to a subject that I wrote about a little bit today, although I haven't posted it yet, and that is Wall Street's secular bear market. And some of the new subscribers who are coming in all the time, welcome, 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 may not be familiar with this at all, though you would have found data on it in the archives, particularly the audio archives. But I've been saying for several years, really since the bubble burst, that Wall Street was in a secular, as in very long-term, bear market, constantly defined here as a generational-long process of valuation contraction. So in other words, declining PE ratios and rising yields overall. And the big variable in stock markets really is generally valuation expansion and valuation contraction. You'll be able to, well, I've talked about this a lot in the past, so I don't want to elaborate too much. And Mark Farber has an interesting piece that touches on some of this that I will be posting here today. Okay, so secular bear market on Wall Street with this valuation contraction, not in linear fashion, but in sort of rolling waves over, I say, approximately a generation. I see Farber's mentioning 14 years. He's picking that up from Russell Napier's book, The Anatomy of a Bear, but it's usually longer, in my experience and observation, than 14 years. Now, that doesn't mean that everything else is in a secular bear market, and I would say that emerging markets, for instance, Asian markets, are in secular bull markets, and that makes them a really hot, attractive area, and that has been one of Fuller Money's major themes, as you know, for over 3 years now. And as far as Wall Street is concerned, on this valuation contraction during a secular bear market, what will that secular bear market actually look like on a chart? Well, what I've emphasized over the last few years is that the direction of the trend on Wall Street in nominal terms will be determined by monetary policy. It's as simple as that. How much money is the Fed willing to throw at markets? Now, we have some prior examples. For instance, we had a little, we had some tightening and sort of a neutral monetary policy throughout most of that period of 60, if we smooth it all out, throughout most of that period from 1967 into 1982, when the last secular bull market began, 1982. So that was a flat performance overall, with the Dow encountering a glass ceiling near 1,025, and it would have had several bungee jumps on the downside, particularly in 73.4. Now, that's one type. Now, then you have Japan from 1990 into 2003, where there was a very tight, drastically tight monetary squeeze, and that produced a jagged downward trajectory for that secular bear market, exceedingly painful. The Nikkei, for instance, fell 80% from its high, and that you might remember my piece saying that that was enough. That rang some bells back in May, or was it April? I can't remember. I think I wrote the piece in May. I'm sure I did. Still in the archive. And then there's another type of secular bear we can get, where so much money is thrown into the system that shares actually rise overall, and that's been kind of the environment we've seen where, all this liquidity that we've been talking about, so many people have been talking about, and I certainly have, the rising tide that lifts all boats, and that gives what looks like a bull market, but as Mark Farber points out, a bull relative to what? For instance, the Dow's been has ranged its way back up to its numerical highs, but it's been falling steadily against the market's choice in terms of hard money. The market's choice being gold, of course. So that's the environment that we're in overall. And there are two hugely bullish secular themes that are going to run and run and run. One is supply and elasticity meets rising demand. You'll be pretty familiar with that. That's mainly centered on the industrial resources, but also precious metals. And then the other theme is emerging markets, and you'll note some overlap there. And particularly Asia. For me, the real value, the great value, is in Asia, for the most part. That doesn't mean that there aren't opportunities in Europe and America and anywhere else. Of course there are. But it's more of a cherry-picking action there, whereas if you have tracker funds in the Asian markets, let alone a well-managed unit trust or investment trust closed-end fund, I suspect we will do much, much better over the longer term. And so those remain, fuller money's two very big themes. I see no reason to change those themes. Say valuations in Asia, very, very appealing. And among the developed country markets there, Japan and South Korea are my two favorites by far. But look at the base that's developing on Taiwan, for instance, and China. I like now that the government is well and truly behind the markets and succeeding. India, of course, my major favorite for the very, very long term. I like pretty well all of them. Vietnam, brilliant performance in recent months. Probably a very good long-term play as well. This is where most of my cash is going to be deployed. What's currently a great deal of my investment capital, my long-term portfolio is divvied up between the resources and the Asian markets. Incidentally, I never have a balanced portfolio. That's a recipe for mediocrity. In my book, The Fuller Money Approach, top down. Take the long view, survey the world, see what looks best in terms of chart action and valuations, and concentrate in those areas. And with investments, I'm really hoping that if I've called it right and if the environment is basically right, that it's a Warren Buffett type situation. You stay and stay and stay and stay with these things. And of course, I have the trading portfolio, which is something quite different and fairly and very active. Okay, now, anything else? Yes, what about where we are right now in this market cycle? I've been fretting about the second quarter and third quarter correction. It's not guaranteed, particularly given all the money that's sloshing around the system and that easy monetary policy and all that M&A activity. And yes, a lot of people are talking about some contraction in that very easy monetary environment. And I think that the evidence is mixed. Yes, we know that central banks are moving up short-term interest rates in many countries, not least in the US, and the Eurozone is doing that as well. So that's pretty important. But there's still plenty of money sloshing around. They're not draining the system. There's talk of Japan, moving away from the accommodative, very accommodative monetary policy. And that means that they will suck back some of the vast amounts of liquidity that they pumped into the system. But, they're doing it with a straw here. So it's not had any sort of dramatic, noticeable effect. It's had a bit of a psychological effect, made people more nervous. The main tightening, indirectly, with, that we're seeing here, is in the rising of longer-term interest rates. But they were coming off ludicrously low levels, in my view. But I think they're going to continue to move higher. And actually, I think what we're seeing now is base formation completion. In other words, we had those V-bottom bases for yields back in June 2003, spike upwards, saying that the secular bull market, 18 years long in government bonds, had ended, and that we were then in the bottoming out base building process, which is the beginning of the secular bear market in government bonds. And that, of course, is why I'm short the long-dated government bonds of four countries. So that's an exciting investment opportunity. Well, speculative opportunity, I should call it. But suffice it to say, I'm not interested in buying government bonds at all. I'm only interested in shorting government bonds and running those trends. What will I worry about? Well, the inevitable reactions within those trends. But I would be very surprised to see a big reaction in the government bond trend until we do see a medium-term correction in global stock markets, and that frightens people back into bonds temporarily as they also become a little bit more worried about growth. Right now we hear a lot of people talking about declining growth, but we remember we still have a synchronized global economic advance. And in other words, all regions of the globe are in a period of economic growth, and we had not seen that for at least 9 years, and some people are saying 15. I'll settle for 9. So this is an important development, and it's helping to drive up those long-term interest rates. And that creates a headwind for stock markets at some point. I've been saying initially the rise in long-term government bond yields, decline in bond futures prices, of course, was bullish for equities, and that people would be pulling some money out of the fixed interest sector and moving it into equities. But as they continue to move, those yields continue to move higher, at some point people are going to say, you know, we've locked in reasonable gains in stock markets, and let's grab the yield in bonds now. No, we haven't reached that Rubicon yet. I certainly don't think it's at 5% for U.S. 10-year treasuries, but might it be 5.5%, 6%? Well, the market will tell us, and it's something that can't be forecast in advance. It's going to be an issue of crowd psychology, and there'll be other events that will help to influence it. But I've made my point here. I don't want to be long government bonds. It's a secular bear market. If you need to be in that sector, keep the money in short dateds. Now, what about stock markets, though, in a medium-term correction? If we don't get it, it's because of all the liquidity and the M&A activity that, of course, couldn't take place without the liquidity. If we do get it, it will be because long-term rates are rising. It'll be because we've gone 37 and a half months without a medium-term correction, which I would define as at least 10 to 20%. And that's very unusual for stock markets to do that, and I don't think it could have happened without all the liquidity sloshing around in the system. Then we also have energy, and that is likely, well, I've been saying that we're going to get energy prices breaking upwards here once again. The fundamental background for this is so obvious and clear if you look at what's going on, and I'm amazed to see how many analysts are in denial over this. And big oil remains in denial, largely with their fingers crossed. Big oil knows what's going on, but their long-term contracts are in jeopardy with oil prices at current levels, let alone higher. I've discussed that before, so I won't review it here again tonight. But the demand for oil Global demand rises remorselessly, and I reckon it'll be about 85 million average, about 85 million barrels a day in 2006. And obviously it goes up when you have a synchronized global economic recovery. But even during the recession period for many countries, 2001, 2002, the global demand for crude oil kept moving up. So it's been moving up for years and years. And I don't see it declining until we get a quite significant global recession, and I don't think that's around the corner. So that demand is rising, and just to replace the average of 85 million barrels a day that I anticipate, as do some others, for 2006, would require some 35 billion barrels of oil. So this is a classic supply-demand situation, and right in line with Fuller Money's theme of supply and elasticity meets rising demand. The world isn't running out of oil, but there's less of the conventional stuff around, and the refining capacity is tight. Gasoline is moving up in anticipation of a potential squeeze, and some of these other resources again, the supply stream is fragile, to say the least. We're talking about Iraq, Iran, Nigeria, and Iran only politically. Then there's the weather factor, and so on. The news, incidentally, that helped to trigger this upper dynamic in natural gas today was that a lot of power stations are switching away from crude and back to natural gas. I've mentioned this before, although not a lot, but you may recall it, and it's something that's pretty well inevitable, although it always lags the price action. And they can switch back and forth, but it's can be a little bit expensive to switch over, and initially. So the cost savings, people have to be convinced that the cost savings are there, but natural gas, again, has been low, and the oil price has been high, and so thus the news that, hardly surprising, that power plants are beginning to switch back towards natural gas. So there we are. Will we get the correction? No one knows for sure, but I would just sum up on this equity scene by saying that this is a bit more risky time than we have seen previously. Do we need to bail out of everything? Well, I'm not going to touch my investment portfolio. The only thing that would cause me to touch my investment portfolio is if we didn't get any correction and the liquidity continued to slosh around the system. And caused big accelerations on the upside. You may feel we've seen some pretty big accelerations. We've seen some valuations go up quite a bit, such as in India, but that's such an exceptional long-term story, rather, that I'm not going to disturb my investment position. Although I did get stopped out of my futures position that I put on the 30th of March. I got stopped out today, and it gapped down through my stop because India reacted, came down, the Sensex had come down from 12,000, which it nearly touched last Friday before then forming a downside key day reversal. You'll remember seeing that chart. Fell down, touched 11,000, first area of potential support, and recovered quite well, although it was still down on the day. You'll see that chart, of course, in the library. But the JII came down. Truth to tell, I actually wanted to sell it when I saw the key on Friday, and I could have got out 10 points higher. But I knew that a fair number of people do track some of my positions, and if they had come in A couple of days later, they would have paid up for it a bit, and if I said, right, I've taken my profit on that it might hit it, and that I wouldn't feel so happy about that, and you probably wouldn't either. And so I thought, well, man, I'll just leave it to the stop, and it's not that big a deal anyway. But do I still like JII for the long term? You bet I do. And I have a lot of it in my investment portfolio. Okay. So I think this is just a time to be a little bit wary, not to be too aggressive in here, as far as stock markets are concerned. I'm not deploying new capital, for instance, although I've been doing a certain amount of trading. I'm not deploying new investment capital. I'm sitting on capital at this stage. In terms of the government bonds, you know my view. I'm running short positions here right now. We're just seeing the base completion in terms of yield, probable base completion, I should say. They'll have to sustain the breakouts to prove that it actually has been base completion, but I suspect it is. And in terms of currencies, not a whole lot going on. I expect the dollar to range lower, but the big move won't come until after the uncertainty about where the higher side of the Fed rate increases actually is. Is it five? Is it 5.5? Whatever. And people don't know. Probably the Fed doesn't even know. It'll take its cue from events, including the stock market, long-dated government yields, and the economic data. In terms of resources, I've already mentioned this big secular bull market. Again, to repeat myself, the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. This is very, very important. Now, what we do know is that a number of these metals have been racing ahead recently because of the risk of production shortfalls due to strikes. Now, originally, when I talked about the supply and elasticity theme 3 years ago, it was mainly because so much plant had been shut down and it would take a long time to start this back up. And then that was delayed further by rising costs. And then we also have the strikes that are taking place. And we also have the kind of the left-wing governments saying, well, it was okay to let these foreigners develop this stuff when the price was relatively low and we couldn't do it ourselves. But now, hey, we're sitting on a very valuable and appreciating resource. Maybe we should take this back under our own control. I can understand why they wish to do that, and I feel the same way in those countries in all probability. But what it does mean is that there's less supply. And then you get the Russian situation. You might have seen some stories saying that Russia's oil production is actually declining. Well, it certainly isn't because they're running out of the stuff, and it certainly isn't because they don't know how to actually produce it, although they're less efficient after taking control of more of that stuff. But this is not that high tech. Here, not at this stage, in terms of Russia's petroleum resources. So they're perfectly capable of producing more. But put yourself in Putin's position, and you're sitting on this vast resource, all these billions in oil. Well, are you going to be saying to the industry, pump like crazy so that we can get the price down to help American drivers and overtaxed Europeans and so on, and so that we can goose up Chinese growth a little bit more? Or will he say, wait a minute, we're sitting on black gold here, we're rolling in cash with the amount of production that we're actually doing, so we don't really need to pump out more of the stuff, and maybe we can actually cut back a little bit and let the reserves last 100 years or whatever. Well, which would you do? It's really a rhetorical question, isn't it? Okay, so that's the supply and elasticity theme, which is going to run and run. I expect oil to break upwards and push on up to at least $80 here this year. I wouldn't be surprised to see natural gas go back up to at least 10, but remember, I'm long, so I'm hoping. And in terms of the metals, where strike action or the fear of strike action is driving these up, we can expect reactions afterwards. But from what levels and how much of a pullback? These are secular bull markets. And most of all, when we read all this front news page stuff about commodity boom and uncharted territory and highest levels in 25 years and bubble, bubble, bubble. And sell, sell, sell. I mean, how many times have you heard people say sell copper over the last many years? Or I'm talking about the last 3 or 4 years, or sell gold over that same period. Well, you know, if you go back and look at that UBS report, and I've had similar data on the site in the past, you go back, and we'll be able to produce this sort of data in the chart library before too long. And you adjust those metal prices for inflation so that we're not just looking at nominal prices, we're looking at these metals in real terms, then you see very clear, compelling evidence that prices aren't all that high at all. It's just that the purchasing power of the dollar and other currencies has declined considerably since 1970. So in real terms, these so-called booming metals, and sure they've gone up a long way, but they've gone up from their lowest levels in real terms ever that we had seen in the late 1990s and early in this decade. And they are still way below their 1970 highs, and that's true of gold, of course, as well. So that's one reason why I think this bull market is going to run and run and run. I haven't even talked about the demand side, but look at China, look at India. India hasn't even, or it's barely begun its infrastructure rebuilding. And then look at what's going on in Dubai, and why heavens, even in sleepy old London, you know, we see plenty of construction going on. And then some of these South American cities, countries that are just enjoying the resources revenue. Again, they're modernizing. So, global economy synchronized in a period of growth, that means boom time for metals. That has always been the case, but we have never, ever seen such demand as is currently coming from China and with India. Certain to follow to a very similar degree. So this bull story is going to run and run and run, and I want to participate in it pretty well every step of the way. In terms of shares, again, I generally prefer metals to the shares, but I hold my three favorite blue chip, absolute class mining shares, Rio Tinto, BHP, Billiton, and Inco. Now, there are plenty of others that are awfully good, but I doubt that there are any that are actually better. That doesn't mean there won't be other more speculative ones, or something becomes more fashionable and actually outperforms my big three investment grade ones. But for me, they're like funds, and I just will retain those for a very long time and add during the dips. And Inco is the one that had lagged and has just spectacular potential still from current levels. Well, they all have spectacular potential, but I wouldn't pay up for the Rio and the BHP Billiton. Inco is they're certainly not expensive though, and Inco's barely begun its move. It's been delayed by uncertainty over the Falcon Bridge merger, but even if that fell through, Inco's a world-class company on its in its own right. So, big theme for me. And gold, this is the hard currency of the market's choice. The evidence is overwhelming. Look at the charts of gold in the world's other currencies. It is just streaked into new high ground, breaking out of those multi-year ranging base formations. You can see those in the library, and I'm posting one a day in here, sort of drip feed system, just to remind people of what's going on. And I'm sure I will want to have gold for a very, very long time. And occasionally it's proxies. I let silver get away from me in this year's run, and some of you who are smarter than I did not let it get away. And bless you've done splendidly on that, and long may it last. But I am leveraged up in that gold, and I do think it's going to go enormously higher. And yes, it will outperform the Dow, and yes, it will rise against all currencies in my view. But again, we have charts just to make sure if David's getting carried away here, or if the facts change. Hopefully, if the facts are to change, I would change with them. But the charts will show us whether we're on the right course or not, and certainly they are bearing out my contention that gold is the, and its proxies are the stores of value, the currencies of the market's choice. And I think that's pretty much a wrap. I'm not going to say anything about soft commodities in here just yet. I've been paying less attention to those, and I don't want to waffle or make this broadcast any longer. So again, if you're taking a bit of a break in here, you get a bit of an enforced break due to some market holidays, well, just have an absolutely splendid time, and I will be back and broadcasting again next Thursday. All the very best.